Good morning, everyone. Let's start with the opening chant. An unsurpassed penetrating and perfect Dharma is rarely met with, even in 100,000 million kalpas, having it to see and listen to remember and accept. I vow to taste the truth of the Tathagata's words. Good morning. This Monday, the 21st, is the longest night of the year, the solstice, and the time we mark the end of the year on our usual calendars is coming up very soon. So this is a particular time of year, and as we reach the end of this year and this dark time, it can be quite useful to consider, what are we doing? How are we living? How do we want to live? We take time to reflect. We stop and recognize what is and call forth what can be. We are often so busy making, doing, so we can stop and ask, when do we listen? When do we hear? Our lives are fleeting. So it is important, I think crucial, to take this time to reflect, listen deeply. Not later, not next year, not some other time, but now. Particularly this year, when we are faced and continue to face so many challenges. Such times drive us deeper into consideration of how we live and offer us the opportunity to creatively respond. So we ask, what is old? What is new? How do I understand old and new? What do I want to grow? What do I want to bring close? What do I want to shed? How can I cultivate the spirit of practice in my life in each moment without fixed ideas, but with vigor and grace and gratitude? We talked some time ago, I don't know, it's been a few months now, about vow. And that's the feeling that we're talking about now in the dark of night. These times of consideration reflect and dialogue with, express the continuous practice that is the heart of our way. All beings together, each moment. We are taught that each moment is new, even as it also is shot through with past and future. We're also taught that our response, our participation matters. We matter. All beings matter. It can seem like each day is much like the last, especially it seems since lockdown started. Over and over again, we say hello to our neighbor, we chant the Heart Sutra, we sit zazen, we go to work, or we work at home, or we struggle with not working. We bow, we wash dishes, we put on our masks, we take care of the dog, or the garden, or the trash bins. Or we wonder over and over again, how are we going to get by? What's going to happen? How can we meet this moment? When we stop and reflect, we can come to know each moment as a reality that includes past and future, and that is completely new. We live at this intersection. It is a kind of doorway to a way of living that is not constructed by the past or future. This is the spirit of new. This is the spirit of the new year. And it's a spirit that we realize every moment of our lives, but these kinds of times, this dark time, this time where we recognize turning of the earth, shifting, is particularly good. So we consider, I ask you to consider, how is each moment new for you? How is each encounter new for you? How does what you have known, what you have trusted, guide you in your response and how you inhabit what is new for you? How do you bring what is known and loved and trusted into this new moment in a vital and encouraging way? We're not just shedding in new. New holds everything. So the challenge of the new is to do just this, to weave what is known into what is unknown, what becomes alive in this moment. It is a creative process. It's a process that demands the best of us, that we ask what is really needed in our lives and in our world. Just to be is enough. We say this over and over again. Just to be is enough. But how are we? Are we asleep? Are we looking over our shoulder to see what others think? Are we driven by the need to be special or an anxiety about what is to come? Are we filling our days with activities that we think tell us who we are? All that is a waste of time. It's what we do. We're human. We do it. So there's no harshness involved in seeing that. But it is a waste of time. Unless we use it as a means to deepen our commitment to the path, to a path of dignity, humility, joining, awakening. Everything allows us to open a door to life. A poem by Soen Nakagawa Roshi tells us something about this. These are his words. Vast emptiness, as the year comes to a close, I re-enter the mountain. Vast emptiness, as the year comes to a close, I re-enter the mountain. So we ask ourselves, how do we re-enter the mountain of our awakening? Take the time to consider this. Notice we are re-entering the mountain. This mountain of our awakening is not new to us. It is our home. And yet, it's also new in each moment. We turn and re-enter this mountain over and over and over and over. This is a repetition of what is, and it is completely new. We need to turn and take that step. It is there. It may not look so spectacular, maybe a kind of little mountain, not one of those Alps. Maybe it's one of those golden hills we see so beautifully here in California. We ask ourselves, this doesn't look like so much of a mountain, but it is uniquely itself, each moment. Isn't that enough? Isn't that enough, just this? We pay attention. Not to be a perfect practitioner or to make something spectacular, but to see, hear, taste reality and to be transformed by it. This is entering the mountain. There is no repetition. I've said this before. There is no repetition, but we learn that through repetition. Alive in the posture of inquiry. We do the same thing every day, and it is not the same thing. How could it be the same thing? When we trust, are engaged, awake, responsive, again and again and again and again and again, like Zazen. Each moment new, seems the same, not the same. New. So I want to encourage you to take some time to attend to how you cultivate this posture in your life, how you re-enter the mountain. Attend to what you are grateful for, what you are given, to your deepest intention. Write it out. Not lofty resolutions, but humble, earthy intentions. Then make it real for yourself, knowing that failure is inevitable. And this failure is not an obstacle, it's an opportunity, like Zazen. Failure Zen, as I've said before, is alive with possibility. It is not an excuse to run for the exit. Because as we know, there is no exit. There's just this life. As we encounter ourselves and our world in this way, we come to hear a request to rest from seeing and doing, to rest from our lives as a production. Our production of identity, of accomplishments, of meaning, of all the things our habitual mind tells us we need. We hear a call to cease the headlong rush to the next moment, to stop and listen, remember, re-enter the mountain, and respond. Dogen writes in several fascicles in the Shobogenzo about a particular kind of relational reality, and he uses the word kanodoko, responsive communion, a way of living our lives and experiencing our lives in which we realize the dynamic reality of mutuality, and we are transformed, and it is new in every moment. This is returning. This is returning and entering the mountain of our awakening, becoming the mountain of our awakening. It is steady. Mountains are steady, changing, steady. This is the ordinary daily practice of Zen. It is your ordinary, creative, daily practice. It's about honing your being as an instrument of wisdom and beauty in the world. Finding ways to encourage yourself, encourage others to live this way is essential. When we try and discuss this, we can reach the limits of ordinary language. And we can turn to metaphor and images and to poetry, just as Soen Roshi did. Poetry can express what we cannot in our day-to-day language. When we engage and create in this way, we loosen the bonds that constrict our vision, our understanding. We can enter the inconceivable in a way where this and that don't have to match up perfectly. We don't have to make everything so consistent and understandable. The space between opens to us and in us. And perhaps we can hear in a new way. I think it's a good thing that we don't have to be what we think a poet is to express ourselves in this way, or most of us would never say a word. We just need to take the time to do it, including this in our time of personal reflection enriches it and adds a new dimension. There is a tradition in Japanese culture of writing a death poem, a kind of greeting or expression of one's life, practice, understanding. And this is included in one's will. We talk about this every year because it is something that we do at Ocean Gate and have for quite a long time. Some people write a death poem traditionally every year throughout their life to be prepared in case death comes unawares, just kind of snatches us. And also as a practice of facing impermanence and death, regardless of how long we think we have. There is so much of this happening right now in our world. You know, it's interesting, at the time that this developed, there was also some opposition to it because many thought it would become too precious. So it's important that we don't think about this as a precious, refined, elitist thing. It can be quite raw. So for quite a number of years now here at Ocean Gate, we have written these poems and shared them with each other at our New Year's gathering. This year, we will not be gathering in person here at the Zendo to chant and ring the bells together and share tea and have a bonfire in the back and read our poems together. So we have to find a way to do this. And we will find a way to do this with our dear friend Zoom. So we'll talk a little bit about that after the break, and we'll keep you posted. Because it's important, I mean, we found this over these 9 months, that we honor our time together and that we create ways to be together. And there have been some real gifts to that. So I want to close by reading you some poems. And then I have a few more words. This first poem is by Kosho Uchiyama Roshi, Shohaku Okumura's teacher. And it's pretty well known, so you might have heard it before. It's called Life and Death. I think I have to say that one of the reasons that this is particularly precious to me right now, because my own teacher is reaching the end of his days. And I think often of what life and death means and how our lives have ripples far beyond our death. This is responsive communion. So these are Ujjayi Maharshi's words. Water isn't formed by being ladled into a bucket. Simply, the water of the whole universe has been ladled into a bucket. The water does not disappear because it has been scattered over the ground. It is only that the water of the whole universe has been emptied into the whole universe. Life is not born because a person is born. The life of the whole universe has been ladled into the hardened idea called I. Life does not disappear because a person dies. Simply, the life of the whole universe has been poured out of this hardened idea of I back into the universe. Shall I read that again? Yes? Okay. Water isn't formed by being ladled into a bucket. Simply, the water of the whole universe has been ladled into a bucket. The water does not disappear because it has been scattered over the ground. It is only that the water of the whole universe has been emptied into the whole universe. Life is not born because a person is born. The life of the whole universe has been ladled into the hardened idea called I. Life does not disappear because a person dies. Simply, the life of the whole universe has been poured out of this hardened idea of I back into the universe. This is new. This is change. This is how we understand each moment of our life. The other poems I'd like to read to you are from this little book called Japanese Death Poems. It's filled with really beautiful poetry. And these are poems that were written by monks and nuns and poets, haiku poets mostly. This first one was by Roshu, a haiku poet who died on the 18th day of May, 1899, at the age of 74. He says, "Time to go. They say the journey is a long one. Change of robes." Time to go. They say the journey is a long one. Change of robes. This next one is by Saikaku, who died in 1730. On the eighth day of the eighth month at the age of 70. He says, "I borrow moonlight for this journey of a million miles. I borrow moonlight for this journey of a million miles." This one is by Toko, who lived 1710 to 1955. He says, "Death poems are mere delusions. Death is death." Death poems are mere delusions. Death is death. And then this one by Kyoriki. Just to tell you, Kyoriki was extremely proud of his talents as a poet and sometimes said that other poets were no better than dogs. He was a student of Basho's. So before his death, he wrote, "Till now, I thought the death befell the untalented alone. If those with talent too must die, surely they make a better manure." "Till now I thought that death befell the untalented alone. If those with talent too must die, surely they make a better manure. And one last one by Kang Yu, who died in 1861. It is indeed like that. I had never noticed dew on the grass. It is indeed like that. I had never noticed dew on the grass. So our question is, how do we notice dew on the grass? And not, again, it's so important for this not to be precious. It's just dew on the grass. It's just suds in the dishwashing tub. It's just oatmeal for breakfast. And new each time. I'll read you a little of some poems I've written over the last couple of years, just to encourage you to know that you don't have to be a poet to do this. This is a part of one I wrote in 2017. Well, I'll read you the whole thing. I said, live with the light of the moon cracked open, each day, until no more. Now I say, we are the moon cracked open, the broken vessel that sheds light is light and dark and full beyond measure. A strange perfection, as Wendell Berry says. Each moment, the tender, inexpressible reality of just this. Nothing more, nothing less. I say trust this completely beyond imagining, becoming the body and breath of faith. There is no other way. And then the following year, I wrote, I said, live with the light of the moon cracked open, a strange perfection. This year, a prayer, I think. Yes, yes, the moon cracked open. Thunderous fire, the cry of a child alone. To know beyond what we can know, a seam of gold that heals. To be a Dharani, weaving just this, with hands and feet, a mind, a voice, Namu. This has nothing to do with negotiation and everything to do with kindness. Deep, fierce, relentless kindness. So I encourage you to take some time to investigate what new means, to reflect, to write, to engage in some poetry, to engage in some of the questions I raised, perhaps, or other ones that have personal meaning for you, and also to write a death poem, something that expresses your understanding, something that is alive for you, simple, a few words, longer words. It's been a really cherished part of our practice here at Ocean Gate. And it's something that you can do too. When we come together virtually, however we work that out, for those of you that are willing, we will share these poems. And you don't need to share them with anybody but yourself. So let's explore this new. And thank you very much.